Today is the first Sunday in the season of Lent. And as I often say, the season of Lent is a good time for taking a long, hard look in the mirror, for taking stock of who you are and where you're headed. If that's true for any of us, it's true for all of us. The season of Lent is a good time for the church to take a long, hard look in the mirror, to see who we are and to ask where we're headed. I want to do that on this 204th anniversary Sunday by taking a closer look at our name, breaking it down word by word and asking what it means to call ourselves the First Baptist Church of the city of Washington, D.C. What does it mean, for example, to say that we are first? According to our friend and fellow member Robert Cochran, it doesn't mean that we aren't necessarily bigger or better than any other Baptist church in town. In response to my query, he said, the first has to do with the fact that indeed the congregation was the First Baptist Church in the nation's capital. But the earliest name was probably the Baptist Church of Jesus Christ, constituted in the city of Washington in the territory of Columbia. You think it's hard to get this name on the church bulletin? The 1809 covenant called the church the Church of Christ in the city of Washington and the District of Columbia. By 1835, the Constitution and covenant referred to the group as the First Baptist Church in the city of Washington, as there were a number of Baptist churches in the region and in the city by that time. The first time Baptists actually met in Washington was in the summer of 1801, when the Reverend Richard Lewis, a Baptist minister from Baltimore, preached at a service held in the old Treasury building. Less than a year later, this church was constituted by 6 lay leaders and 4 ministers gathered in a private home in Northwest D.C. One newspaper reported that a church of the Baptist denomination had been constituted in the city, which its founders hoped would serve, among other things, as an additional inducement to such as may feel inclined to remove to this city. So from the beginning, it was hoped that this church would be a spiritual home for Baptists who came to this place from every place. It was a good idea then. It's a good idea now. More could be said about what it means to be first, but what does it mean to be Baptist? This is a crucial question in these days when the word Baptist has so many connotations and so many of them negative. I think it's important for us to remember that this church was founded before the Southern Baptist Convention, before the American Baptist Churches, USA, before the Progressive National Baptist Convention, before the Alliance of Baptists, before the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship, in short, before any other national Baptist organization in the United States. We were Baptist then because we believed in freedom. We believed that individuals had the right and the responsibility to make up their own minds about Jesus. We still do. In the words of Ken Sehested, a modern-day Baptist prophet, no pope, no bishop, not even any TV evangelist can prescribe the terms of faithful living for Baptist. Or as another Baptist prophet put it, our own James Dunn, ain't nobody but Jesus gonna tell me what to do. If that sounds stubbornly, almost dangerously independent to you, well, it is. Baptists believe it not only should people be able to make up their own minds about Jesus, but also that everyday, ordinary Christians can read and interpret the Holy Scriptures for themselves. They believe that churches ought to be able to determine their own mission and ministry, that they ought to be able to choose whom they will ordain and who will be called for positions of leadership. They believe that a free church should exist in a free state, that neither the church nor the government should be in the business of telling each other what to do. the defining principle for Baptists is freedom. And that's a good thing. I can't think of a better principle for a church in the capital of the free world than freedom. But let me add this caution. Being Baptist doesn't mean that we are free to do whatever we please. It doesn't mean being so stubborn or self-centered that we don't care what anyone else thinks. It only means that we must be free to follow Jesus, and that we must not let anyone or anything keep us from doing that. Much more could be said about being Baptist, much more. But what does it mean to be church? In Greek, the word is ekklesia. It means to call out. Perhaps the simplest way to understand it is that Jesus has called us out of the world and into the kingdom. He has invited us to follow him as his disciples. To the extent that we are willing to do that, to deny ourselves, take up our crosses, and follow him, we become part of the church. If the word first is the historical piece of our name, and the word Baptist is the confessional piece of our name, then the word church is the missional piece of our name. While those other words say something about who we are, the word church says something about where we are headed. And where is that? Well, if we really are disciples of Jesus, then we are headed wherever Jesus is headed. Like those disciples of old, we let him take the lead and we just fall in behind. It's a little harder for us than it was for them. They could follow him physically and literally. We have to follow him spiritually and imaginatively, but we have a good starting point. We can follow his movement through the four Gospels. We can watch what he does. We can hear what he says. We can see how those first disciples put his teaching into practice and what some of them wrote about how we could do the same. We may not always be able to answer the question, what would Jesus do? But we can come up with some good answers to the question, what does Jesus want us to do? In the only commandment he ever gave, he said he wanted us to love one another as he had loved us, which is to say he wanted us to be ready to lay down our lives for each other. To say that we are a church is to make a commitment to that kind of radical, self-sacrificing love. That would be hard enough, but that's not all. In underscoring the great commandment, Jesus made it clear that there is nothing more important than loving God with all our heart and mind and soul and strength and loving our neighbors just as much as we love ourselves. Again, when it comes down to what Jesus wants, he wants us to love. It's not an option for Christians. It is a commandment. I think I could say it this bluntly. We need to learn how to love or get out of the church. That's harder still, but that is not all Jesus wants from us. He wants us to take this way of love into the world and teach the world a new way to live. In Matthew 28, he says, as you go into the world, make disciples of every nation, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. In Acts chapter 1, he tells his disciples to start where they are in Jerusalem and then move out as his witnesses to Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the earth. I think he would tell us to do the same, to start right where we are and to move outward from there. In Matthew 25, he insists that part of the church's mission is to show compassion to every put down and pushed around person on earth, to care for those who are hungry, thirsty, naked, strange, sick, or in prison, as if we were caring for Jesus himself. That's what it means to be the church. And I think that's what it means to be the church in any time and in any place. But what gives a particular shape to the church's mission is its context. And that's where the next cluster of words in our name comes into play. We are the First Baptist Church of the city of Washington, D.C. How is that different from being the First Baptist Church of the town of Gravel Switch, Kentucky? Just to name one. Apart from the obvious trappings of prominence and prestige that make up this city, there are the people called Washingtonians. I asked several of you last week to help me answer this question. What is a Washingtonian? What does one look like and think like and act like and need? I got several answers, but Marcia Sprinkles may be a good one to begin with. She said, the biggest danger in asking what is a typical Washingtonian is that there are not one, but many. And then she and others began to elaborate. There are rich and poor Washingtonians, black and white Washingtonians, urban and suburban Washingtonians, national and international Washingtonians. The theme of diversity was picked up in some way by nearly every other respondent. Brandon Robinson, Kim Howell, Rod Coates all had something to say about how different we are, adding that along with all those other categories, there are successful and surviving Washingtonians, resident and transient Washingtonians, gay and straight Washingtonians, weak and powerful Washingtonians. Glenn Bratcher and Mary Pavlovsky both suggested that the one thing all Washingtonians need is to be loved and accepted, to find a place that feels like home and to have a reason for living. What they said suggested that woven through this tapestry of diversity, there is always a common human thread. I remember sitting at a sidewalk cafe shortly after I moved to this city and subconsciously classifying everyone who walked past. I didn't mean to do it, but I did it. There's a white, middle-aged man. There's a young African-American woman. There's an Asian mother pushing her child in a stroller. There is a man with fluorescent pink hair. There's an old Hispanic couple walking arm in arm. There is a guy with an iguana on his shoulder. If I had been sitting at another restaurant in the city, I might have seen senators and congressmen and Supreme Court justices, but even so, I soon discovered that the classifications became meaningless. The categories I was trying to put people into seemed artificial and constricting. Why did I have to say white man or African American woman or Asian mother? Why did I even have to make distinctions between men and women, which actually turned out to be much harder than I thought it should have been? Why couldn't I just say that all of these were people, or even better, why couldn't I just say that all of these were children of God? You may not agree with that. You may not believe that every person is also a child of God, but I'm reminded of that place in the Bible where it says, God loved the world so much he sent his only son. It doesn't say that he loved just one part of the world or just some people of the world. It says he loved the world in all its earthy, unwashed, unrepentant glory. That he loved it enough to send his own son to live and die for every Washingtonian who walked past me on the sidewalk that day, and every other Washingtonian as well. It was the kind of amazing grace that inspired our spiritual forebears to constitute a church in this city 204 years ago, and to call it, in those days, the Baptist Church of Jesus Christ. Now there's a name for you, a name that is above every name, even the name of this church. That at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow. And every tongue confess in heaven and on earth and under the earth that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Hallelujah. What is in a name like that one? And how could we learn to live it out every day?